Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park in this morning. Good friends Beth Parnitza and Pete Mogul in this morning to talk about stuff. Good morning. Good to have you guys here this morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Ted. Thanks for having us.
Okay. If Pete's in a different chair, which is unsettling to me. No one else can see this, but he never has sat there, and Beth has never sat where she is. So this is...
The perspective is entirely different, yeah.
It is. Yeah. So who knows what's going to happen today?
It's going to be a wild morning.
I could just see, because Peter usually goes along, could become very argumentative suddenly.
This is going to be totally...
Speaking of which, the day, this is, I was thinking today with it being just kind of a rainy, misty day, this is a good day. There is a lot to see with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. And if you don't mind getting wet or a little bit, or just go out and visit a park today.
Right. There's no bad weather, just bad clothes, right? Just not
exactly.
The right clothes. Bring your raincoat. Honestly, for me, I'd almost rather, especially as we start to get into the hot summer months, to think about, hey, if it's only like 65, 70 degrees with a light mist, that's probably better than 102 degree heat index for getting out and hiking or something.
Yeah, so
I would take it. Yeah, I think too, like a lot of times our kind of practices, you know, we'll do the outdoor programs and tours as long as the visitors are willing to brave the elements, unless there's like, you know, lightning or something.
Yeah, that changes it.
But yeah, I mean, right, like a few days ago when it was oppressively hot, that's less, you know, comfortable than standing out in some light mist and all, and you could do the programs just the same on a day like this than on an ideal weather day. And then, we have the indoor options as far as the exhibits go, and Chatham is partially open with some...
is that real? Because I knew it's been closed for a little bit.
Yeah, we're kind of like in between projects, so it's like we have the foyer and one room with some kind of like interactive... exhibits set up so you could, you know, come by and check that out. And that's we have almost 200 people at Fredericksburg Visitor Center on a day like this.
Yep, misty and everything, yeah.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people were looking for some indoor options, which we also provide with those, and it was quite busy with folks. So,
well, both the Fredericksburg and Chancellorsville Visitor Centers are great. There is a video if you've got company from town and from out of town here, go see that, and then the exhibits. Chancellorsville is just terrific.
Oh yeah, you know, I often think of it as the best VC. So this is a long-standing thing between Pete and I. Ted, you look shocked.
Yeah. Now you started it, Ted. This is, you asked for it.
I know, right? I'm afraid I spent 9 years as the Chancellorsville site lead, and Pete has spent
15 years as the Fredericksburg site lead.
Man. Oh, interesting.
So, the reigning champion is obviously
is it
Fredericksburg Visitor Center?
Is it? Anyway, yes, Chancellorsville has so much to offer between just slightly newer exhibits.
I do like Chancellorsville.
You know, really?
Yeah.
A fully accessible building. You know, all the exhibits are on one floor.
That is unfortunate for
with
us,
the movie.
Yes.
I mean,
but yeah, look at the character of the Fredericksburg Visitor Center. You know,
there is
1937,
that.
CCC project.
The bookstore is bigger.
That's, yes.
That's true.
In Fredericksburg.
But consider the 1960s architecture of Chancellorsville and the kind of new mentality of the Park Service that it represents with having, you know, a full visitor center experience, not just kind of a haphazard, we're moving exhibits into our offices that happened at FEC, right? Like, this is fully designed to enhance the visitor experience.
I had no idea, Pete, that Beth was going to be so prepared for this.
Laying down the
because she
here,
does
yeah.
have, she does, she has, she comes in with some very strong arguments.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you, right, if you like mid-1960s architecture styles and like...
Who doesn't?
Light fixtures and everything. I don't think, wasn't it the superintendent at the time who, during the dedication, or rather would like... specifically pointed out that they didn't like the style.
Oh, probably. Yeah. There was actually a major kind of internal war going on in the NPS at the time because the 1960s brought an influx of funding to the Park Service because of the 50-year anniversary. But it also meant that the Park Service was using a lot of modern architecture, like mid-century modern architecture fixtures, and they were still trying to have it kind of blend into the environment, but it wasn't the same as the previous styles that were a lot more rustic, log cabin-y. And so, yeah, a lot of folks were very upset and didn't like modern architecture. You know, I think today it's, like, charming to people, but at the time it was new, and a lot of folks thought it was ugly, and they wanted a more park-like aesthetic. So, yeah.
I mean, are you one of those people, Pete? No, I'll take it. It's okay, I guess. But, yeah, Fredericksburg Visitor Center was not designed as a visitor center, so I guess we deserve some type of, like a golfing handicap for that, right? Like, give us an extra point or two. I mean, we were making the best with what we have. But yeah, that was a whole different vibe. That was just designed to be, like, the park headquarters, offices. That's why it's all segmented in there.
Oh, okay.
And the front desk used to be a receptionist office and everything. So each site has their own, you know, pros and cons.
Well, in defense of the Fredericksburg Visitor Center,
yes,
when you go downstairs, I think those are some of the most fascinating exhibits.
Yeah.
That in the lower level about the war.
Yeah, the civilian aspect, that was something we were kind of figuring out, that weird space again, because it's a building that's not designed as to encompass exhibits. That down the stairs kind of we're like, why don't we make it like the basement of a house in Fredericksburg during the battle, right? And putting in those elements, the interactive elements, I think kind of made that work better. And then the aftermath, which is something a lot of times that gets overlooked, and it can be uncomfortable, you know, to think about. I guess it's not natural to dwell on the destruction and the death and injuries that were sustained because of it, but that is part of the story. That's crucial, right? So to dedicate that whole portion to that. I guess, too, because Fredericksburg's fought in an urban environment, that adds an extra layer. So we wanted to talk about how the community was impacted. And, I think we're pretty happy with that, the way that came out.
So we have, before you just walk out, if you just stay in the upper level there and look at things, go downstairs at the Fredericksburg Visitor Center, because it's great stuff. But on the other hand, at Chancellorsville, I will say, my all-time favorite artifact, and I think this goes across the board, I think it's even better than the Smithsonian.
Cool.
And Beth and I did years ago. I was just like a baby doing videos back then. But the letter and the map that Stonewall Jackson.
Oh yeah.
The Stonewall pen
he drew and sent to Robert E. Lee. Yeah.
Yes. And that is fascinating. And I go. It's not always out, but it was out this spring. It still may be out, but I went and saw it this spring, and it's terrific.
Yeah, we often bring it out for the anniversary, and I should correct myself, I don't think he actually sent it to Robert E. Lee, but it matches the paper that he sent his last note to Lee on, but that's not the same thing. But yeah, we usually, because it's paper, we don't want to leave it out for too long, so it's not always out all year round, but we try to get it out for the Chancellorsville anniversary so folks can see it if they want to. But yeah, it's
so interesting. He drew, and it has all the various topography things and what for his attack there at Chancellorsville. It's just fascinating to look at.
Oh yeah, you know, and I remember we did a whole special exhibit for it during, I think, the 150th or maybe shortly thereafter, and I spent a lot of time staring at it and trying to figure out his pencil marks and what they meant, because in some places it just looks like he just kind of kept jabbing his pencil at, you know, Chancellorsville, which was just this big blob, and, you know, and figuring out different, you know, different landmarks that he was using. But yeah, it's something that, you know, isn't just a sort of static belonging, but something that, you know, that Stonewall Jackson interacted with and influenced his views of what was taking place at Chancellorsville. So,
So a lot of times, to bring this all around to what my initial, and I didn't know that there was that, and this was fascinating.
This is what comes up when you put us in different chairs.
Yeah, no, this might never have been like this because everybody's just kind of agitated and a little bit different.
Well, you re-agitated us.
I did.
Yeah, we've been on good terms for a while. Now you just
all again. Yeah. But when a lot of times people have company here and they just think, well, let's find a museum to go to, or we've got to go to Washington to see things.
Oh, yeah.
The Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park, and these are just two of the places. There are in all the other battlefields, there are little kiosks, isn't the right term, but it's the Spotsylvania battlefield has a little area that will tell you about things, and you can read the roadside signs and
the shelters,
wilderness
right?
The same way. Yeah, shelters.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's good, too. In the summer, we have the majority of those open with Elwood and the Jackson Death Site. And it's funny you say, like, a lot of folks, I think in the area, you take it for granted because you drive by it every day.
You do.
You know, it's free. And then it's in, like around the holidays and all, families will need to show their folks around. And they'll come into the park and they'll try to be playing tour guide, but they may have never actually been here themselves.
And or they have no idea.
They came a long time ago and they'll walk in and be like, what do we do here, you know? And they're trying to show their folks around. But it's, I get it. It's like if you live in New York and you don't go to the Statue of Liberty, yeah. It's just so convenient. But yeah, I would say, like, you know, don't think that it's free. So you can come by for 15 minutes. You can come by for an hour. You can come by over a series of days. I think that's the main thing, is just to get in your mind that, you know, even if you just want to veer off and spend a few minutes and check it out, you know, that's what it's there for. You just have to make that extra effort, which is, I guess, the hard thing for a lot of folks.
No, I have said family members that sometimes I'll go with them, and that's where I've learned things, or I see the updated programs, or just see things, or you just send them, and they go by themselves, and we'll come back and just say, you know, we spent an hour and a half. It was fascinating. Have you read those signs, kind of things?
Yeah, well, and this is a great time, you know, as Pete mentioned, with it being our summer season, which I know we'll probably talk more about as the morning goes on, but, you know, we have extra programs going on,
yeah.
Extra things are open that aren't always open year-round, so it's a great opportunity to even see more and have more places to stop in.
So Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. Beth Pernitz is here, Pete Moggold's here. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
We are talking Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. You should check it out. Just some great sites, some great battlefields, and history in the area. Pete Moggall is here. Beth Parnitza from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. One of the things, the other thing, we talked about just all the battlefields around here. Just anybody who studies Civil War history, all the generals that were here, and besides the battles, but just the generals that routinely came through here, always surprises people that any big name spent some time in this area.
I think what a lot of people don't realize is that all four of our battlefields are, you know, Antietam-sized, Gettysburg-sized battles. And even though we've kind of put four of them together into one battlefield park, they're each, you know, in their own right, these major, major battles that involve, well-known figures, whether it's, Lee and Grant or, you know, Ambrose Burnside, Joseph Hooker, who isn't the top of everybody's list, but who should be.
Isn't he?
But anyway, yes. Right. But so, like, we have these major figures who are passing through this area, who are interacting with, you know, locals, armies, everything, you know. Just the sort of scale.
I think what really makes our park unique too is that you can see some progression. Like, they come here, some of them, over the course of a year and a half, right? So, like, Burnside in 1862 then returns as Burnside in May of 1864, and what has transpired during that time, and how have things evolved, and I think that's something too. It's not just one battle in time, which by itself would be, you know, notable, and but now you're looking at how things have progressed, and that's, you know, goes the same for the soldiers. They don't have to be a general. That can be the same for the armies at large. All that, you know, gives our park a breadth of stories that you can't get at a lot of other places, and I think that is now. Do we expect every visitor to come and spend, like, you know, 2 to 3 days going to every single site in our park? That'd be great, but not everybody does that. And that's what we were talking before. You can come by for a few hours. You can come by for a day and then come back again sometime once you process, you know, all the things that we have here. But it is, really a unique – it confuses a lot of people when they come here. They're like, wait a second, you have four battlefields?
Right.
and yes, each one of them is you know, the scale in the top 10, you know, of the war. They might not be quite the Gettysburgs or the Antietams that people are familiar with those names, but to understand how those battles kind of fit into the bigger picture, our battles, I think, are really important.
And Wilderness is often forgotten just because it's out there a little bit, but boy, on a rainy day, just drive, or a non-rainy day, and just go and drive through and walk some of the fields and some of the areas at Wilderness. It's a gripping story.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a great reminder for a lot of folks too that we have, you know, miles and miles of trails in the park. So mm-hmm. if you're looking for a spot, you know, that's close by to get out and take a walk, you know,
yeah,
you'll see nature. You might see some earthworks. Who knows? But yeah, and you know, at Wilderness we have Elwood open this summer, at least 3 days a week, sometimes 5 days a week, and you know, go in and see some exhibits, learn more about the house, about the battle. Yeah, take a drive around. You'll see again earthworks, trails. People's homes. One of the things that I appreciate about the Wilderness in Spotsylvania is that, you know, the further you get out from town, the more you're going to see this kind of mix of small farms, as opposed to the large plantations like Elwood. And so at the Wilderness, you have the contrast of this massive plantation that is Elwood, but then you also have these kind of small farms like Higgerson and Chuning that, you know, you can look at how the war impacted a lot of different people, you know, ranging from the wealthy Lacey family to, you know, people who were essentially tenant farmers, right? Like the Tapp family, and, you know, see how the war impacts folks very differently depending on your socioeconomic status as well, like visiting people's home places, you know.
And the earthworks are just, when I first came to Virginia and someone explained to me the earthworks, wow, I mean, to me, it's exciting to see. You'll come up in an area and you're not expecting to see earthworks.
Well, I think the Wilderness, too, because, I mean, the earthworks that are in the woods a lot of times get, you know, I don't say they're better preserved, but they last longer than the ones out in the open because they're not getting the elements and all. Other than the trees growing through them sometimes. But I think that's what, like, sometimes when people ask about, like, is there anything to see in the Wilderness battlefield, it's all just a bunch of woods. And as Beth was just implying, it's much the opposite of that.
Oh,
when you drive through, you can see that the battle was kind of fought over roads and clearings. And even though they're in the woods, they do dig in and create earthworks at various points. And then there's these dramatic stories, Elwood, which is a plantation cut out of the Wilderness kind of thing. So yeah, sometimes we get people to kind of discount the Wilderness, or they feel that there mustn't be much. And fortunately, a large part of the Wilderness battlefield is developed with the residential things. But they are kind of in areas that weren't, you know, they're not detrimental to your way of going ahead and experiencing the battlefield. I think that we kind of circumvent some of those to a degree. But yeah, definitely one of those, like, people know the Wilderness is a thing and it was bad, but to actually get into it and understand why, nothing beats actually being on the ground.
Oh, it does. And to read all, even though the trees and it's not the same, it's the way it was, the brush and the deep that it was, but to read about the fires and all of that, and to be standing right there. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, and to remember, like, this is really a major turning point in the war and its progress, right?
Yeah.
Seeing Grant come to the east, make his headquarters with the Army of the Potomac, start to shift the direction of the fight to say, you know, we're going to keep pressing forward even if we aren't necessarily winning battles. It is, you know, in hindsight, it's the beginning of the end, but also if you're one of those soldiers fighting in the thick underbrush, yeah, facing, you know, either really brutal trench warfare or fires or both, it doesn't really look like the beginning of the end. So it's one of those interesting moments where you can sort of use your hindsight to look at that and see how important it is, but then also to sort of get into the moment and realize that for these soldiers, you know, this is one more grueling battle, but it's also the beginning of a series of just exhausting, seemingly endless fighting as the Overland Campaign begins.
The other thing, so you talked about Elwood being open, and in Elwood in Orange County is, I think it's technically, isn't it in Orange? Or it's
technically
Spotsylvania.
In Spotsylvania.
Oh,
when they changed the county lines a little, I guess a few years ago.
Oh, they included that.
They included, so Elwood is, but part of the property is in Orange County.
Okay.
But yeah.
But if then you go to the other way, you've got where Stonewall Jackson died, the Stonewall Jackson death site in Caroline County, which is another fabulous place to go to. And even if it's not open, even if you just walk around the grounds, it's fascinating to be there. But to be in that actual house too is another great experience.
Yeah, I think that's what I usually tell folks is that, you know, you might not spend you know, an hour there or more. You can, but of course, you know, going there might, you know, the building's rather small, the grounds are you know, not too expansive. But I think the significance of it, the takeaway from that, the fact that, you know, here we are preserving a place where someone died who happened to be a Confederate general is all just kind of like, you know, the way we remember the Civil War and process these things. But yeah, well, the building itself is open with staff on duty. As Beth was saying, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, hopefully some Thursdays and Mondays as well. And that's really gives you a great opportunity to engage with folks mm-hmm. and kind of delve into some of these, you know, more complex ways we go about things. And we kind of try to set it up there in a way where, of course, there's the rooms that, you know, in the office building, and kind of point people in a direction like, let's think about this a little bit more critically. Let's go ahead and get into this. Obviously, it's not, there's not many places that are preserved where people died, right? So that in and of itself is kind of very right. Worth kind of considering in a way, and try to think on that higher plane. But yeah, you could go there on any given day with the building not open, walk the grounds, read the signs, and I think have a good contemplative experience in your own right. But I think, you know, yeah, Beth was just at a conference and she was specifically addressing some of those types of things. So I'm sure you have things to say about that. I'm guessing.
Oh, wow. Thanks for putting me on the spot, well, here, Pete. No. Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those moments where, you know, Stonewall Jackson in particular has loomed large in his legacy over all of our battlefields. Even strangely enough, right, like at Chancellorsville, we get the what if Jackson was at Gettysburg? And then you're like, well, what if Jackson mm-hmm. was a Wilderness? I mean, he died. How far are we carrying him?
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking about just asking those more critical questions, like why does Jackson's, you know, memory loom so large? And I didn't bring this up at the conference yesterday, but I often think back, every time I think about Jackson's legacy, I think about the dedication speech for the Jackson Monument at Chancellorsville. And the way that the speaker says, essentially, if we want to look at the legacy of the United States, we look at the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. If we want to look at the legacy of the Confederacy, what we need to hold up on, as he described it, two tablets, the characters and virtues of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a curious moment, right, to say, you know, for the Confederacy in the post-war, they don't want to look at the Confederate Constitution, which enshrines slavery perpetually. They want to look at these two figures that they have made into heroes who are actually, in fact, very complex people.
Right.
And how do we as a society start to peel back those layers and say, okay, why did we preserve a place where Stonewall Jackson died? Like, did not live, did not, you know, spend any time except the few days before his death. And why has it drawn so many people and so much curiosity over all these years? And, you know, how have we participated in the deifying of these individuals without taking the critical moment to say, okay, you know, Jackson was a noteworthy general, but was he larger than life?
Right.
Was he worthy of saying, you know, was he this kind of perfect marble person? He and Lee both, that's more pressure than any mortal person should probably actually hold. And if they don't really live up to that, why have we spent all of this time putting them up on a pedestal like that in ways that again, no human being can probably actually live up to, unless you're Harriet Tubman, but that's a story for another time. but, right, and so, and then what does that do to our society to say, you know, Chancellorsville, especially for the longest time, has been so Jackson-centric? Well, whose stories are we missing if we only focus on figures like Lee and Jackson? And the answer is going to be, you know, endless critical stories to shaping our history.
Yeah.
And if we focus on them in a way that's not being, I don't want to say honest, but forthright. And I know there's times I've worked at the death site where, you know, if I just deign to suggest that maybe Jackson made a mistake or lost a battle at one point in his career, it's like I kicked their dog and insulted their grandmother. And it's just, I'm not like denigrating the guy's wreck. I'm just telling you that, like, just like any human being, you know,
right,
he has some flaws. And that's not what people, I think it's a combination. People just don't want to hear that about some of these Confederate icons, period. And at the place where he died, that seems like it's somehow, you know, not appropriate. And it's, and again, that's not, you're not going to come in there and we're just going to hit you over the head with that. But it is worth bringing up for the very reasons that Beth just said. Let's make sure that we don't venerate this guy to the degree where he's beyond reproach. And then we're getting a false actual impression of them, which that's the worst thing we can do with history is you know, skew it in a way that's not accurate. I think that's what we're specifically here for as the prophecies. Let's make sure we get the right stuff out there, and let's make sure that people have good info. You can make your opinions up from that on your own, but we're there to make sure we get you, you know, pointed in the right direction. And that can be hard, and not everybody wants to hear that, but if we don't try, then we're not fulfilling our mission, and I feel like we're kind of letting, you know, letting folks down.
Yeah.
Right?
Good stuff. Didn't need to take a quick break. We're going to continue on this morning. Beth and Pete here from the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:32.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a centennial broadcasting station focused on Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning. Beth Parnitza, Pete Mongel here this morning as we talk about what is going on this summer with the Park Service. And speaking of that, the summer Spotsylvania history hikes have kicked off, and this is really a good chance to be able to just roam around and get a kind of an in-depth look at various parts. There are so many stories in Spotsylvania. For the longest time, I thought Spotsylvania was just the Bloody Angle, and that is such a large area, and so much happened around that battlefield.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, Bloody Angle just kind of sums it up. But right, yeah, there's 5.5 miles of trails, so you could, you know, we're not going to do all 5.5 miles on each of those hikes, but you could do different sections of those. So many, it's a battle that lasts a week and a half, so you can cover a lot of different aspects of it. I think I'll point out, too, that I think it's going to probably be different rangers that do them. There might be one or two, but even if it's the same ranger, they're probably going to do different things, so you could go to all four of them? Is it four total, I guess, in the end? It's every other Saturday. The first one was this past Saturday. Basically, we're cycling. Every Saturday, there's either a Spotsylvania history hike or a history at sunset. So if you want to do morning or evening, you can take your pick. But don't think you go on one and that's it. You come back the next week, be a whole different ranger. Could come back the next week, the week after that, or 2 weeks later, and it could be the same ranger doing a different, you know, trail network and all. But yeah, it's a pristine battlefield. So many great stories, just like we talked about how the wilderness has all this, fraught with things to consider. The Spotsylvania Courthouse battlefield is equally significant in that regard.
Yeah, and also, you know, as we were talking about with wilderness and the earthworks, like miles and miles of earthworks at Spotsylvania, and having so much time, with the soldiers having so much time to create and improve those earthworks, they mm-hmm. are in a lot of places really substantial. And I always think of them as, you know, like the last thing that many of the soldiers actually left for us to sort of see and witness on the battlefields. And so it gives you that very tangible connection to the people who fought there, who, you know, recognized that every inch of that earthwork was another inch of them that was safe or safer during that battle. So lots to see, so many different stories there, so many things that I think, yeah, people just don't realize or don't think about or don't understand of, like, you know, how complicated Spotsylvania actually was. But yeah, it's a great opportunity to get out in the morning before it gets too hot, take a walk, learn a little bit more. You know, it isn't designed to be as intensive as the history at sunsets for those who are familiar with that. You know, it'll be a little lighter on the ranger talking, but to still give you some context and some stories around the spots that you're visiting.
Again, 10 o'clock, and it starts at the Bloody Angle. And the remaining ones, there'll be one on the 28th, July 12th, and July 26th.
Yes.
So, again, 10 o'clock and on a Saturday morning. And like you said, it's fascinating. And as many times as I've been to the Spotsylvania battlefield, there's always an area, there's always a story, or there's always a skirmish or a battle that you don't know about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just because we're starting at the Bloody Angle doesn't mean we're just going to hike the Bloody Angle portion or the Mule Shoe. We could use that as our starting point and go like five different directions from there. It's just that's where the biggest parking lot is and all. But sure, yeah. No, and I think a lot of us, too, like Spotsylvania Battlefield is one of the more easy to interpret, but because it is so similar to what it was like in 1864, that makes it a lot more conducive to getting an idea of the actual landscape. And a lot of the staff, we vie on who gets to work, the Spotsylvania shifts for that very reason. So we're looking forward to an opportunity to engage with visitors. And I think it's always cool, too, when you have a program like that, like an extended program where, the ranger is maybe not going to do as much, stop and formally tell you a bunch of stuff at length, but you can informally engage with them, ask questions, and then maybe they're going to take you to places that you haven't been before and really delve into things more so than if it's a big group of 50 people at a visitor center where you have a more formal setting. So some people like that. We tell folks that everybody learns differently. Everybody has their priorities. Some people like stand up and talk. Some people like watching the movie. Some people like going on these interactive hikes. So you can take a pick. It's another option for folks out there.
Also, and whether it's these kind of programs or even History at Sunset, sometimes some of the people that come have just will ask questions because they've got a family member or they knew. It can be fascinating. People in the group that add to the whole context.
Yeah, and I think as we look at, how we do the work that we do as historians and interpreters, that's honestly, to me, that's one of the biggest things is recognizing the, expertise or knowledge or perspectives of your audience. So even if folks aren't super well read on the Civil War, they might have, they might be descendants of somebody who fought on one of our battlefields or lived on one of our battlefields or was enslaved on one of our battlefields. And their perspectives can be incredible, to give that kind of personal touch aspect of things. Or they could be not from this area at all, have had no connection to the battlefield. But, some of the most interesting perspectives that I've had folks add would be, modern day or even kind of longer past veterans of wars who bring in their perspective as veterans, people who have immigrated or are visiting from, foreign countries, sometimes countries that have been at war themselves or have had civil wars or similar kind of internal conflicts. And, part of our goal with interpretation is to share the stories of these places, but it's also to hear from our audiences about how these places impact them and how they kind of jive with their perspectives, and recognizing that, we're looking at major societal questions on every piece of our preserved ground, and that everybody has something to contribute to our understanding of that space. And the more different kinds of people that we get on our programs, the more that we can hear those perspectives, and everybody benefits.
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize for us that, as a park that is open to the public at large, like Bess was saying, we get folks from all over walks of life, the country and the world, and there's not a lot of other entities that would be able to say that, right? Like, if you belong to a Civil War roundtable, okay, well, those are like-minded people who are going to come to that. If you're in an academic setting, you have people who are pursuing that as their course of study. But here we are just opening the doors up to the world, and folks come in who know next to nothing, folks come in who have a ton of knowledge, folks who have ancestors, people from halfway across the globe, and that really makes it beneficial for us to see what do folks come to the table with, and how can we help them along the way. That's something that I think is kind of cool. You're on the front lines of history. You can really make an impact for folks in a meaningful way for everybody, right? And that's, I think, what kind of sets the Park Service apart from a lot of other, institutions or otherwise.
Yeah. So History at Sunset is back.
It is. Yes, it's been a little bit delayed. We had some internal challenges, but we're hoping to put the press release out, fingers crossed, sometime this week. And it'll start, the first program will be July 5th.
Okay.
And we are, I think we're at Chatham on July 5th.
You are correct, I believe. Yes.
Okay. Great. So keep an eye out for that. We'll have that posted up this week. I also want to give a shout out to our Reading with a Ranger program.
Yeah.
That's going to be on Tuesday mornings. I think it's every other Tuesday.
Reading with a Ranger.
Yeah, so this is designed for our younger audiences. Ages 4 through 8 is recommended, but feel free to bring kids of any age, really. And it's going to be at Chancellorsville Visitor Center, the best visitor center.
Boy, I like how you slipped that in. That was good. That was good. Pete was defenseless.
Right, because I haven't even finished the description, right? So we're going to do... we'll have one of our rangers there who's going to read a book and do like a craft or activity with the kids afterwards. So that's at 10 a.m. again every other Tuesday morning. So you know, bring your kids. I know that it can feel like maybe a bloody Civil War battlefield isn't quite the place to bring your 4-year old, but
there are stories to be told, and I'm sure for the rangers that get to do this, what a difference.
Yeah.
To do something like that.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, part of what we want to emphasize is that this is a place of learning. This is a place for people of all ages to come and learn. You know, Pete, as our education coordinator, does a ton of programs for especially fourth graders, but we get folks of all ages here. And, you know, we want to engage people on an age-appropriate level, no matter who they are. So, yeah, bring your kids.
Well, I think Chancellorsville, too, the visitor center there being set in the woods, I think some of the books are going to be about nature. Some of the books will be historical. So there'll be a variety of topics, too, because I think that's something else. You know, people look at us as a site to go to for lots of things. And because that the setting of that visitor center is unique, we are going to address that to a degree. And, yeah, there might be a little activity that goes along with the reading sometimes. But it's free. Just show up. And hang out, and you know, we'd be glad to have you. And we got some traction last year. We did it, and there's some groups out in by Chancellorsville that the people who live in the vicinity that would bring their youngsters out there for like picnics, and they were coming anyway. So we're like, you know, let's have something additional to offer, and kind of get those kids at a young age to appreciate their parks and realize that they're there for them.
I just find that just fascinating, and just because I've only dealt with you with, you know, as we deal with these adult, you know, high, you know, what if Jackson had lived, and what if, and what with all of this, but to do programs like that, and to have kids not be, you know, I don't want, you know, when they grow up, they won't be like, oh, I wouldn't be interested in a battlefield.
Well, I think you have to be a realist that, like, you know, most kids are not interested in history. That's not natural. That doesn't mean they dislike it. It just means that it's not like their maybe main thing. But that a lot of times you need that spark. You need something to kind of get you going. So by bringing a young person to a park, you enable that, right? Or you bring them to a park and you don't, it could be any number of things that they pick up on, and maybe they become a naturalist, maybe they become an archaeologist, or that now intrigues them and all. But yeah, we have the school groups that come, like Beth was saying, a lot of fourth grade groups. That's when they're doing Virginia studies and the Civil Wars in there, the curriculum based. This year, I think we've had close to 2,000 students come during the spring. You know, an entire elementary school will bring their fourth grade class. We'll have 150 students at a time. And teachers, if you want a free, convenient field trip, you contact the park. I'll be glad to work with you on a date. And we go to Chatham. We talk about the causation of the war. We analyze stories of the enslaved. And then when the army showed up, and then we go over to the Fredericksburg battlefield at the Sunken Road. We line the students up. We have them be soldiers, and we go through the whole experience of what it would have been like to a certain degree to be in the battle in the army. And then we end in the National Cemetery and you know, talk about the cost of the war and how we remember it. We also have the Junior Ranger programs. So we're a few weeks into the summer. If you're looking for something to do with your youngsters and you want to bring them by, it's a free activity book. There's one at each of the 4 battlefields. I would say it would take you about an hour to do. It's not too involved. It's just enough to kind of get you know, into the story. Parents can help. They team up. And then when the kids are done, they turn in the booklet. A ranger kind of goes over it. You take a pledge that you'll be a good junior ranger, and we offer you a patch as your reward. So that's also a good way to get kids into the national parks, because then you could go to the other national parks, all 430-some, and get junior ranger badges and patches as well. And even if they don't become like a history buff, they're now becoming a national park appreciator, and they'll go out and take advantage, which around here, if you drive an hour in any given direction, you could hit umpteen national parks, and let alone going to the far reaches of the country. I'll also point out that I know for some parks, like Shenandoah or the big name, you know, premier parks, you have to pay to get in, which won't necessarily be cheap. But if you are a fourth grader, you can go online and apply for a free national park pass for you and your entire family. You have to answer some questions online, and then I believe you print out like a certificate. And when you get to the park and you roll into the entrance gate and they try to hit you up for $25-$50, you show your certificate, and you get your whole family in for free, which is a pretty nice deal. They really want those fourth graders. They feel that that's an impressionable age, and they want to encourage those families to get out. So yeah, you could do all those things here at Fredericksburg, Pennsylvania. You could go to other parks and do them as well. But yeah, that's something, an initiative we really try to encourage here.
Pete Mongle here, Beth Parnitzi here. We'll wrap it up. Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Great stuff this morning. Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. A lot of what to do this summer kind of things if you've got family and if you're just dealing with your own kids. Pete Mongle and Beth Parnitzi here. We talked to Beth a second ago about the history at sunset, and that will start...
Yeah, July 5th is going to be our first one.
Yeah,
and then
that's
it'll
right.
be every other Saturday evening. We're only doing four this summer, but we'll start with, like I mentioned before, at Chatham. But talking about the summer 1862 occupation of Fredericksburg and Stafford, which of course leads to not just, occupation of the town from like a civilian and army perspective, but also brings the Union Army in proximity to the area, which enables countless enslaved people from this region to move to freedom in Union Army lines wherever they might be that summer. So that'll be our first one with a major important discussion. And then other topics, July 19th, we're looking to go to Old Salem Church, which is a church site that we don't often get to open up for folks.
It's fascinating, too.
It is, yeah. And we actually just did a major rehab inside a few years ago, so it's looking great as well. But yeah, so a story that ranges from, it as a church to include refugees and a battle that took place. So fascinating story there. And then we're looking in August to do a program on May 3rd at Chancellorsville, and potentially incorporating some Red Badge of Courage topics. And then we're hoping, I need to ask American Battlefield Trust still, but hoping to do a Slaughter Pen Farm program to round off the summer.
Okay. So, well, those are great yeah. stuff and great places. Mm-hmm. Between that and the summer Spotsylvania history hikes.
Yeah.
A lot of things to get in. And when we were in between... I'm always telling people who will say, adults who will say, I never liked history. The way the Park Service tells history, just like you were talking, Pete, about just talking with kids, whether you're talking to kids or adults, it's not just this happened here, this happened here, this happened here. It's stories, and that's what you do. Nobody does it better than the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park.
Thanks, Ted.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Your programs are just terrific, and so whether you're a kid or whether you're an adult, you're going to enjoy yourself. You're going to walk away and learn something.
Yeah, we hope that you'll learn something and that you'll feel really engaged with the stories. You'll feel like it's something that speaks to your life. That it isn't just a bunch of things that you were supposed to memorize ages ago, but it's things that are really tangible and relevant to how we are today as a society, how America got to be who we are.
You do all do such a great job of reading diaries or finding things that people wrote or said at the time and incorporating them.
Well, it's a new perspective. I think that's the thing too. Even if you think you knew about a historical person or event, there's always another angle or way of kind of considering them. And I think that's what we try to point out too, is that's what's kind of neat this time of the year, too. We get our seasonal staff that comes in, whether they're interns or seasonal park rangers, and they'll have, a new angle that I've never thought of before. And
yeah.
I might not necessarily agree with it all the time, but it's like, oh my gosh, like I've worked here for 15 years, and I thought I knew this, and now here's a different way of kind of looking at it. Thing. So that's kind of the way we provide, I think, that, again, if you're a Civil War buff or whatever, and you want to come out and walk a battlefield that you walked 15 times before, maybe you'll see it in a different way,
yeah.
right?
So It's like I always thought Chancellorsville was the best place, and Beth was backing me up on it, and then you came today and gave me other reasons to look at Fredericksburg.
All right, good, good. I'm glad that we
great stuff.
Help you out with that, Ted.
Great stuff. Pete Boggle, Beth Parnitza, thank you both. Thank you for what you do for the community. These are great programs, and we'll get together and talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ted.
Thanks for having us, Ted.
Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Summer Spotsylvania History Hikes and the History at Sunset. Check them out. That's it. Thanks for listening. See you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.